Hi, this is Larry Owens.
Hi, I'm Jay Harrison G.
Hey, I'm Eric Lockley.
Hi, I'm Kevin Curtis, and you're listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And if y'all remember podcast alum from season one, Kirsten Childs, I learned about her work through New York City Center's Encore's off-center production of Bubbly Black Girl Sheds Her Chameleon Skin. I loved the show. It was so special and it resonated with me in so many different ways. But I loved even more that it was written by a black woman. The whole Encore series at New York City Center celebrates the tradition of American musical theater with revivals featuring original orchestrations as they were meant to be heard. Coming up next is the beloved and late Jerry Herman's Mac and Mabel, and of course, Gold Star is offering it under its listings because it's got our back like that. But as we all know, that is just the beginning with Gold Star because they provide affordable tickets to theater, comedy shows, concerts, and so much more. So download Gold Star and let's make some memories, y'all. And every week, I'm like, I'm so hyped, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited. I maintain that. I'm thinking about making t-shirts because that has become a catchphrase for this podcast. However, this week, I am particularly so hyped and so thrilled and so excited because, y'all, I'm getting choked up over my words already. I'm like, we had an amazing meeting, which we'll get into in a little bit, and we haven't seen each other in person that much since. But I just, like, already know that, like, we vibe and we connect and we click, and that's why I'm excited. So, moving right along. You may have seen him in Invisible Thread off Broadway, The Wiz and Gypsy at the Muni, or the A Chorus Lines National Tour. Look, I'm just too excited, y'all. Or you may have seen him How We Met, which was at Paper Mill's production of Beauty and the Beast, my personal fave. Y'all, I hope you're as hype as I am. Welcome, Kevin Curtis.
Oh my God, thank you. I'm so excited to be here too. Like, you don't understand. Like, when I met you at Beauty and the Beast, I was like, who is this girl? Like, she just makes me feel so good about myself.
Oh my God.
Well, and this is like our first time, like, really getting to, like, get in the gigs and, like, chat. So I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
I am too. Well, because then we ran into each other at Broadway Mondays. Remember, like,
yes. Oh my God. Yeah, I was trying to figure out where I saw you, but it was at Broadway Mondays, just randomly.
Shout out to Hardware.
Yeah, you were at, like,
sponsoring
birthday party or something.
Yes, it was. Very amazing. But no, I'm glad that my scary, intense, bubbly excitement, enthusiasm for Beauty and the Beast and you was not off-putting.
No, give it all to me.
Because it was, I mean, and we will get into it, that your performance was not only stellar, just as, like, it just was stellar as you as an artist and as an actor, but, like, as a black man playing LeFou, like, again, we will get into it, but I was just like, I need to know him.
So, oh, wow. Thank you.
Yes. Y'all, buckle up for this podcast. I'm so excited.
Stop it. I can't.
Let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start. Mm-hmm. You grew up in Baltimore.
Baltimore, Maryland. Yes.
Tell me how you got involved in performing arts there.
So what's funny is, in my elementary school, Leithwalk Elementary, shout out to Leithwalk.
Shout out.
The art teacher at Leithwalk, Mrs. Flynn, she taught a tap class every Wednesday after school.
Okay.
And I remember being like, I want to be in tap. I want to go take tap class. And so they bought me tap shoes and I started taking tap class every Wednesday with Miss Flynn.
Miss Flynn.
And I kind of didn't even know I didn't know what Broadway was or like, you know, or anything about it. But I knew that I liked to dance and I knew that I liked tap. I knew like I liked to make noise with these shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of got my, you know, like the creative juices flowing. And I had like several instances as a kid where I, you know, found that my ideas were stolen by commercial, by like shows and stuff. First being when they put Taj Mori in, what's the show, Full House?
Uh-huh.
And he was like, who's it, Michelle's little friend?
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. I came up with that idea. That was supposed to be me.
Listen.
In my head, like, I was supposed to be Michelle's little friend that, like, you know, had to move away.
Yeah.
And the second was when I saw a taxi cab and it was audition. It was advertising Lion King as a Broadway show. I was like, wait a minute, we're real people. That was my idea. Like I was like, I have it all set up in my room.
A
like
visionary.
Pride Rock is my bunk bed. Like
right.
They stole my idea. Like Dang. What's going on?
Yes.
So my grandmother was like, you got to figure out a way to do that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like to do it seriously.
Do it seriously.
Outside
yeah.
of the bunk bed. Pride yeah. Rock, which sounds inspired.
Uh-huh.
So who were some of the like initial like influences for you artistically when you were taking this tap class and seeing your ideas stolen?
I mean, I remember watching Jackson 5, The American Dream,
uh-huh.
that miniseries.
Yeah.
In the 90s on TV. Like it was an event. Like I remember my whole family was watching it. And I think just seeing all those chocolate children
mm-hmm.
up like on screen, like obviously like I listened to Michael Jackson, like, you know, everybody growing yeah. up and like to sing and like to dance. But I think it was like seeing that kid portray Michael,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. and like with such depth, and like he was dealing with like some real world stuff, like, you right. know, abuse. And I was just like, whoa, that looks like, I don't know why, but I was like, that looks like fun. Like, I want to do that. I want to be on TV, mm-hmm. like with those boys and, yeah. and do that. Like, so I remember like, so a lot of like the child actors of the 90s really inspired me. Macaulay Culkin,
mm-hmm.
You know, Elijah Wood, like seeing all those mm-hmm. like children hmm. on TV and in movies, like really doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Taj Mahmoori.
Right, you I was know, like, smart guy.
Okay,
yeah, yeah.
smart guy. Like, yeah, like I would watch those shows and those movies and be like, I can do that. Like, I should mm-hmm. do that. Like, mm-hmm. how do I do that?
Yeah. So yeah. How did you do it? What was the first step after the, like, talk with your grandma if you need to take it seriously?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a whole thing. Around when I was 12, my grandmother passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I think when that happened, and we were really, really close. When that happened, I was like, I think I, you know, those words and hearing her being like, you need to figure out how to do it. Like, take it seriously. Go do it. It was almost like, I need to do this for her. Like, this is something mm-hmm. that she expected me to do. Like, mm. you know, she challenged me with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I should figure out how to do it. And I'm going to go figure out how to do it. Luckily, I went to some really good schools with performing arts program. It's so funny. So, like, yeah, when she passed away, I was about 12. And around that time, we were living in Baltimore County. And my grandmother lived in Baltimore City. And so when she passed away, my mother became the executor of her estate. So wow. we moved into her house.
Oh, wow.
So I was then in a city neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted me to go to this county school because it had better resources.
Mm.
I was finally doing like theater in school.
Mm-hmm.
But... you know, now I was living in the city, so we lied. We lied and was like, you know, like, we live up here still, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Well, I was on the little bus stop going home one day, and a parent saw me, you know, like, on the bus. And they were like, and they pulled over, and they were like, hey, are you okay? And I was like, oh, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm going to my cousin's house.
Ooh, was that like, was called improv, y'all.
Okay.
Yes, and?
But I was actually going home, and then, like, a couple days later, I got a note being like, you got to leave the school.
She snitched.
Somebody was like, you know, we saw this little black boy on the bus stop, and he lives in the city. He does not belong
wow.
here.
Was it a mostly white school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I was in the play. Like I was,
right.
I was in the fall play. Like yeah. I had a role.
Wow.
So like I my mother saw how important it was to me, and I think like in that time. Because I was going through so much with her death, we did everything that we could
mm.
so I could stay in the school.
Yeah.
Like, we got a friend. We were like, can you help us out and pretend
oh,
that we live here?
Yeah.
We had, like, somebody came from, like, the Baltimore County. Like, don't sue me, Baltimore County. Don't sue my mother. Like, because we broke the law. Sorry. We had, she was in the kitchen cooking while the person came over to investigate.
Mm.
You know, she brought, like, pictures. I was able to stay in the school, and I was able to do the play. And I was able to do another play there. And then, like, that teacher encouraged me to audition for the Baltimore School for the Arts. And then I went to the Baltimore School for the Arts. And, like, you know, the rest is history.
Thanks to that snitching mom, though.
I mean, look, but I think that, like, there's all, like, throughout my career, there's always been that snitching mom that's been like, this ain't for you. This isn't a space for you. You don't belong here.
Wow. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I learned very early that, like, there's going to be those people, you know, and you got to figure out a way around them.
Right.
And we did. Right. And I'm glad I had that experience because, like, I feel like I'm still finding my way around that type of person.
Yeah, those obstacles.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that makes the reward or the, you know, achievement sweeter?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's always sweet to find success in the face of adversity. Mm. Because it's like, you know, it's really easy to give up. Mm-hmm. And so often you want to give up. And so often you want to listen to those voices, excuse me, that are like, you don't belong here. And then, like, when you do succeed, it's even better. It's like, ugh, like, thank you. Thank you for affirming that I belong exactly right where I am.
It's an affirmation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that. What was the Baltimore School of Performing Arts like once you got there?
It was, I mean, look, art school is crazy. It was wild, though. It was the first time I was ever around, like, openly gay kids.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And that was, like, that was kind of a shock and an eye-opener and, like, great to be a young person and be able to be out and proud amongst my peers.
Yeah.
in Baltimore City. In the inner city, when you're growing up gay, it's very, like, you know, like, that's not a great thing to grow up and be. And I always say that, like, theater saved my life because it gave me something to do. Like, I wasn't taking the bus home right after school anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and, like, when I was, like, 13, 14, 15, 16, the target was getting bigger and bigger on my head. Mm. And, you know, like, I'd be in situations where I'd be on the bus stop and, you know, you're wearing your, like, big coat. And, like, I was, you know, 14, 15, 16, like, you thought I was a girl. And, like, dudes would, you know, you're in the hood, dudes would stop and, like, try to holler at a girl. And then, like, quickly they'd find out that I'm not a girl.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm in danger.
Right.
So theater gave me an excuse not to be on the streets, not to be on the bus stop, not to be, you know, getting out of school at the same time as the other kids were getting, because I was in rehearsal. Mm-hmm. I was going to my community dinner theater, you know, doing the children's theater shows. I was busy. Like, you know, my mother was picking me up at 8, 9 o'clock, bringing me home, you know? So, it really kind of saved me from the dangers of kind of being a kid growing up in New York City.
Were you aware of
it? Not New York City, in Baltimore City.
Right. Were you aware of that at the time, or is that more hindsight looking back at the situation?
I don't think I was, I think I was a little bit aware of it. I think it was like, ooh, like, good thing I'm not on the bus, you know, or like, I don't think it was, no, I don't think I was aware of it, but I think there was an innate sense to get away from.
Like, protect yourself.
To protect myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I quite had the tools to understand what was happening. But I knew that, like, you know, a target was getting, like, I was getting older.
Yeah.
And, like, I had a bigger target on my back, for sure.
And vulnerable in that way.
Yeah.
So was, and I know it's, like, kind of personal, but was the coming out experience for you, you felt more comfortable because you were in this space with other
Absolutely.
LGBTQ kids? Good.
Yeah, yeah. I was seeing, like, the older kids. I mean, like, we had, like, trans girls at our school, you know, like, and I was just seeing people live out and proud. And, you know, these are kids that come from, you know, very poor households. Mm. Some kids were even homeless because they were gay.
Wow.
So I was kind of seeing, you know, other situations that were way more severe than mine. Mm. And, like, kind of, you know, understanding actually how good I had it and how much of a loving household I came from.
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely allowed me a safe space to kind of, you know, come of age.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And your parents were supportive, it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, like, you know what's funny is, like, I never, like, had a, like, I was a really feminine kid. Uh-huh. Like, I never was like, Mom, I'm gay. Like, I feel like that's not, like, a part of my story. But, like, my mother always, like, my boyfriend would call a house in high school and she'd be like, Jason's on the phone.
Funnily enough, we have Jason here. I'm kidding. Could you imagine?
But no. Like, you know, and I look back on that now and I'm like, oh, she was like making fun of me. And like, I don't come from a, like, you know, a family where we're gonna hug and like cry and talk about our feelings. Like, we show each other love by like making fun of each other and like,
yeah.
You know, giving each other shit.
Around,
so like,
right.
In those moments I felt like, oh my god, like, she's gay bashing me. But like, no, she was making fun of me because I was a 16-year-old with
exactly.
a boyfriend.
Exactly. Yeah, she's yeah. your mom, right.
And, like, now, like, she is total P-flag mom. Like, she is, she nice. Works in city government in Baltimore.
Oh, awesome.
And she is facilitating. She's like, you know, I'm facilitating this talk with the LGBT community. But, you know, gay homelessness is a big problem here. And I'm like, look at you, just
right.
P-flag mama. Like,
right.
I love it. But she wants me to, like, come it. And talk and give my, she's like, because I'm going to give the parents' perspective.
Right.
And da-da-da-da. That like I love it, like, she's totally supportive, but
that's
like
great,
it wasn't like this big like dramatic like mm-hmm. Mom, I'm gay, because like she watched me dance around the apartment my entire life, so like
she's
she
your
knew
mama. Yeah.
She knew.
I think that's good though too, and I feel like the further along we get, we see more like diversity within coming out stories where it's not
yeah.
it doesn't have to be this big traumatic thing.
Yeah,
of course a lot of the time it still is, but you know, there's
sure.
these moments that it's just like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And it, yeah, I there was never a closet for me to be in.
Ooh.
You
right,
know, there was
right.
never, like, I was just, I was
that.
Dancing with the little girls on my neighbor's porch.
Yeah.
Like, everybody in the neighborhood knew.
Unapologetically.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you can, like, dancing the Bills, Destiny's Child at 11,
ooh,
pop, lock, and drop.
You're doing
it.
A writing on the wall reference.
Okay.
Yes. I love it. Thank
uh-huh,
you.
Uh-huh.
Well, so then how did you transition from all of this life you built in Baltimore to New York City?
I just left, like, right after high school. I was like,
how?
Bye.
You just knew.
Yeah. I was like, get me out of here. Like, I've always known. Like, when I was in high school, like, my mother would let me cut school and come to New York and audition.
Your mom's amazing.
Glenda Curtis, she's amazing.
Shout
she
out
really,
to Glenda.
Shout out to Glenda Curtis. Like, she was like, she knew I was like a kid and she knew I was staying out of trouble.
Right.
Like, she was,
right.
Yeah, she never gave me a hard time. You know,
that.
Like,
I,
my grades were always, like, fine.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and she knew that I was passionate about it. So I knew, like, in high school, I was like, I'm going to New York, like, or L.A. But, like, it ended up being New York. Yeah, like, I went to AMDA here uh-huh. in New York City. So right after graduating high school, I got on that Greyhound. And
hey.
I was up here at 18.
What, do you remember your first audition that you had in New York?
Yeah.
What was it for?
It was an open call for Hairspray.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it was back when Telsey used to have those huge open calls. It was somewhere downtown. I remember I came up here on the Greyhound. It was downtown in Chelsea, I think. And, like, you would show up and, like, there's a line all the way down the street
right.
around the corner.
Right.
Like, the huge open call. And I think you would go in and you would sing your song a cappella. And
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, like, you would sing the song a cappella for, like, one, like, little casting person. And then if you got a ticket, you would get a ticket stapled to your resume. And then you would get asked to, like, sing with the piano for the team.
Oh, wow.
And I remember I got asked to sing with the
yes,
piano
you did.
With the team.
Yes, you
I was
did.
Lit. But, yeah, nothing came of it. I was, like, probably, like, 16, looking like I was 7.
But, you know, one of the interviews we had earlier this season with Derek Davis, he said he got advice to audition for things. Like, I know you would have been right for Hairspray, but to, like, audition early and often so you can get, like, the nerves out of your system. So it was probably
oh, yeah.
really beneficial for you.
Totally.
You
yeah,
know?
That was totally my thing, like, out of school, like, right out of AMDA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good thing about AMDA is, like, you could audition, like, your fourth semester. So,
oh.
like, I was like, yes, get me up into these auditions.
Right.
Like, get me out of school. I'm ready to go. And I noticed that, like, it was easier for me to get seen if I went to dance calls. Because, like, I could dance a little bit. You remember I was in Miss Flynn's tap class? Okay.
We knew how to do some shuffle ball change. Right.
We knew how to do a little time step. But, like, I would go into these dance calls and, like, wild out and be crazy. And, like, I may not have had, like, the technique. But they're like, who is that little? Let's call him back. Because right. He's wilding. And nobody looked like me in these auditions. Like, everybody was, like, tall and,
right,
you know. And I was just, like, little and, like, you know, kind of pudgy in the back, like just giving life. And I stood out and they were like, let's call him back to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was singing and they're like, oh,
right.
Okay.
They're like, no, dude.
Thank you. But that was totally my thing. Like I would go to these dance calls, not necessarily the strongest dancer, but like, you know, kind of get kept for my personality and like my, you know, just like doing it-ness. And I would get called back to sing and they were like, oh, okay.
All right.
That's
wow, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So you grew knowing that you grew up in the city is interesting. Because do you feel like the transition to living in New York City was easier because of that?
Oh yes.
Yeah, and I guess you
my God,
like a school structure, which was helpful, huh?
Yeah, I was in school, but it, like just like simple things like knowing how to read a map. Like, I was taking the city bus, like, in elementary school, like, by myself, just because that's what we had to do. My mother put me on the bus. So I think that just that level of just, like, having to navigate the city at an early age and that independence helped me. Like, you know, I just remember, like, some of the people, like, that I went to school with that first year just, like, being beside themselves at the idea of taking the train.
Right.
And, like, would take a cab from, like, 96th Street to 72nd.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm like, okay,
those
y'all got money like
stops.
That?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but, like, yeah, just simple things. Like, I didn't need, like, I was very independent as a kid. And that, like, helped me so much when I first got here. Because like, I wasn't swallowed up by the city.
Yeah, and I was going to say responsible for yourself in that way.
Yeah, yeah. I knew not to, like, bother the crazy people. Like, don't engage the crazy people.
Yeah,
you know, because a crazy blanket man back in Baltimore, like I was dealing with him all the time on the number 3 bus.
Oh my gosh, shout out to
so come on, number 3.
Well so then going out to A Chorus Line's national tour, what was that like dynamic shift like of living life on the road?
I love being on the road.
Do you?
I do.
Okay.
Give me a tour. Give me a production tour.
Yeah.
Get me up in those hotels. That DoubleTree cookie.
But fair enough. I just feel like it's exhausting.
But New York is exhausting.
Touché.
I think my time away from New York actually makes New York livable.
Okay.
In a way. I don't know. I was actually like our tour was short. I was on the last leg. I was on Chorus Line when it went CETA. So I was on it from like I think December of 2009 to June of 2010.
Okay.
So it wasn't like a long time. So
sure,
it was
for
cute
sure.
for me.
It was glam. Yeah,
I loved being in a new city, like meeting new people, sharing that show. And also, I was a cut dancer on the road. Like I had an easy cue.
Oh, okay, right.
Cute contract.
You were like the turn out,
okay.
In, jump step, pivot, whatever, all that stuff.
Okay. Bye bye. Y'all staying on that line. I'm gonna go back here and sing at the booth and be on Facebook on my phone.
Right, right.
So I was ready for the road. I was ready to turn up in each city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was your favorite city?
Ooh, what was my favorite city on tour? I think probably LA. We closed in LA.
Okay.
So that felt cute and fancy.
Right.
Just to be like, you know, on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yes.
Yes, God. Like
yes.
Doing the things in West Hollywood. I think, yeah, that was the big city.
Yeah.
We did some things on that tour. It was a fun, fun group to be on the road with.
That's
yeah.
The After Hours podcast. Y'all get that story.
I'm gonna have to let you know.
On response after dark.
Okay.
That's so funny. Well, so then we need to just dive into it because
let's
I've been
go.
Trying to contain
let's
myself.
Let's
but LeFou, Paper Mills, Beauty and the Beast.
LeFou.
Like
what, yeah.
Context for you. Just to make it all about me. No, Beauty and the Beast is literally one of my favorite shows ever.
Okay.
It was like one of the first ones that made me understand that Broadway was a thing. And
wow.
like listening to the cast album over and over again.
So you were having a big experience that night. I was in the midst of it.
No. For you, I like swept you up in my whirlwind. I've seen upwards of 10 community productions of across the country.
Oh, wow.
I'm saying it runs deep.
Sure.
Like, there was a summer that I was so upset. I guess this was the summer I discovered it, like, got the cast album, and then was watching, like, YouTube videos. Because we didn't have, like, Instagram takeovers and
right.
Snapchat.
Right, yeah,
so
totally.
Just, like, YouTube, Susan Egan and Terrence Mann mm-hmm. eating s'mores in the kitchen. It's just, like, I have a very
yes.
vivid memory. All of this to say, I, like, found the MTI or whoever licensed it, and I was like, Mom, there's all of these productions across the Pacific Northwest. Let's go. So cut to June 2nd, 2019. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Getting to see that was amazing.
June 2nd.
Look, I'm not playing. But I just think, like, like I was saying earlier, like, you as a theater artist, as an actor, you were so, your comedic timing was so great. And I'm like, I know the show. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen a lot of LeFou's in my day.
Yeah.
And so I just want to hear about the entire fucking experience. I guess
sure.
we can start with, like, the audition process. But I just want to know about your nuances of also being, like, a black actor in this, like, kind of subservient role. To
Absolutely.
Get
yeah.
So let's dish, y'all.
Let's get to it. I mean, so I've been auditioning for LeFou and roles like it, I think, my entire career. Mm. What's funny is I have not gotten the chance to play them until very recently.
Huh.
In the past couple years, there's been more inclusion and diversity in these shows that mm-hmm. we're seeing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the types of shows like Beauty and the Beast. Mm. But, like, over the years, like, I kind of got discouraged. Like, I'm like, ugh, okay, another LeFou, another Tommy Gillis, another this, another that. Like, another role that, like, I probably am just brought in because they want to say that they saw everybody.
I see. Checking a box.
Checking a box. Mm-hmm. They saw everybody, but they're going to go with the person that they typically hire in these roles.
Right, right.
So I was getting a little jaded about, like, auditioning for these types of roles that are traditionally going to white boys. So there came a time a couple years ago when I was just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I'm just gonna go up into these rooms and show up fully as myself.
Yeah.
And make the choices that I want to see in the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to speak to that one black person in the audience.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And make them cackle and give them something that, like, maybe only they'll understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that's what I appreciate. That's what I appreciate when I see theater, you know? Or I've grown to appreciate, because sometimes that's all we have or have had in instances. Well, I say all that to say, I showed up to this audition and I was like, I'm gonna just fucking go crazy.
I'm gonna live,
Like, I'm gonna live. And I'm gonna, like, you know, make them feel weird if, like, you know, they don't want to go in my direction, that they have to kind of, like, call me back.
I love that.
And, you know, I don't know, like, what the vibe was behind the table, but, like, I got called back, and at the callback, so there were three Gastons and three LeFous.
Okay.
And every Gaston read with every LeFou.
Right.
Every LeFou read with every Gaston. And I remember being like, oh, I got this. I'm going to make a different damn choice.
Yes, you
every
are.
Every time I go up into this
yes.
room. Just give them I remember, like, one time I was like a ninja rolling on the floor. Like, just being just crazy, just because I just didn't care. I was like, if I'm gonna be brought in yet again to be somebody that you could be like, we saw him, we saw everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I'm just gonna show up and fully be myself, and then I got it.
isn't that how it always happens, though?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like right when you, like, stop caring.
Mm-hmm.
It's right when you are just like, it's not that deep. It's
I wonder if that's, like, a release of the the fear, maybe. You know, it's like a freedom.
I think so. I think so. And and I think that's attractive, too. Mm-hmm. You want to work with that person that, like, kind of doesn't care.
Yeah, they're like,
eh. Yeah, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I don't care either.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, so I think it was a combination of a few things at work for me with that particular booking.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I, yeah.
So then in the rehearsal room, and like if there were any bad things that happened, we don't have to say names and put them on blast, but like what, did you feel like you had a voice in the rehearsal room to bring things up? Like what were the dynamics in finding your character, but also in relationship to Gaston?
Yeah. I did feel like there was one instance where I was like, whoa, should I speak up about this?
Oh.
Which was really uncomfortable for me because I feel like I've had a lot of experiences throughout my career where I haven't spoken up, mm-hmm. or I've chosen to, like, okay, I'm going to just deal with it and ride with it because this is just what we got to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that there was more responsibility with this because there are specific optics with having a black body in that role.
Absolutely.
You know, so there was one specific issue that I spoke up about, and I was, you know, I feel like we have a long way to go as far as, you know, this type of casting, mm-hmm. because I feel like a lot of times we want to check a box, but then the optics kind of aren't really thought through.
Right.
And sometimes we then back away because we don't want to say too much mm-hmm. about, or say too much about the race and the optics. We don't want that to be the narrative. Because, because, like, at the end of the day, Beauty and the Beast is a kid's show.
Yeah.
You know, like.
And a Disney quote fairy tale.
Sure.
Thing,
it's like,
yeah.
What kind of social commentary, like, are you really looking to make with Beauty and the Beast? But it's like where we are in with race in this country, it's like you can't help but think about optics.
Absolutely.
And if there's something that comes up in my heart, you know, with how things are going, it's going to come up in the heart of that one black person in the audience, or that one or two, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
so it's like in those moments I felt that it was necessary for me to speak up.
Yeah I we have conversations on the podcast, and I feel like in the mainstream, you know, theater industry too, of like color conscious casting, mm-hmm. of where it's not colorblind. It's not like you're gonna just gonna throw a black person in a role just to check a box, but it's like, and the example I always bring up is Jelani Aladdin being Kristoff versus being the evil guy Hans in Frozen.
Sure.
Like, if he'd been the villain, what are we saying about that, you know?
Yeah.
But if he was like the hero, I don't know if he was necessarily the hero, but he's like the good guy,
and I think
the heroine.
Yeah. And sometimes we will make those decisions, but then like try to, like, we'll backpedal and be like, oh, but it's not about race. It's not. And it's mm-hmm. like, but like, but it is, because
it has to be.
Everything kind of is. Yeah. Sorry, we got it. We're here. We got to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yo, but like, you killed it.
Thank you. It was fun. Like, let me tell you, I just, like, I was living on that stage.
That Gaston, like, you're the number Gaston, I mean,
uh-huh.
was such a thrill. Such a thrill. Because that's,
we
like, LeFou's shining
there.
Moment.
Yeah, that was LeFou's little moment. I had a lot of fun. And the thing about, I mean, you know, you say that you have a huge connection to Beauty and the Beast. A lot of people do.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of people had opinions about what I did. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm grateful for that. I'm really grateful that, like, I was able to kind of, you know, like, I feel like, you know, people have their ideas of what these characters should be. But, like, me in that role, it's not going to be what you're used to seeing.
Right.
Like, LeFou was sassy. Like,
yes,
you know.
Yes, he was. And we loved him for it.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And I, there were people that did not agree with it. And I had some really, like, open and honest conversations with some people.
But, you know, that's, I mean, look, that is what I think being a trailblazer is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's uncomfortable and hard, I'm sure. But, like, I mean, think back to Jelani, or, like, Aisha Jackson being the understudy, you know, like
Aisha.
Yes. Shout out to Aisha. Like I know they're having those conversations at the stage door too.
Sure. And when she booked that, like, I think that it, like, that frozen casting, I think that was kind of a turning point for me too. Mm-hmm. I've known Aisha for a while, even before she was in New York City. And I was like, girl, when you get to New York, like, the kids aren't ready for you.
For real?
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah.
I knew before. Oh yeah. I knew. No. But that was kind of a turning point for me. I was like, okay, things are happening in a different way. Mm-hmm. It might not be exactly, we still got a long way to go, but now it's time to start showing up. Like, right. I got to start, right. like, you know, not apologizing in these rooms and really kind of, like, going for the jugular with my choices and just, like, being me in these situations.
Did you have any instances where there were young, aspiring Black actors that came up to you? Or I don't know, Paper Mills, like, demographics very well, but
in Beauty and the Beast, there was like a talk back, and like it's all coming back to me. There was like a talk back, and like the assistant director was with the kids before the show, and like he came to my dressing room. He was like, "You got to come to the talk back," and I was like, "Why?" He was like, "There's some girls that like want to know who you are." And I was like, okay. So I get to the talk back, and there's this like group of Black girls that are just like, yes, LaVoma! And I'm like, okay.
You're hype women.
My hype girl, like, you're my people. Like, you're why you're why I'm doing this.
That's amazing.
You know, so that you can like see you up here.
Yeah.
In the way that I didn't as a kid,
right.
you know, see myself represented in a lot of theater like this.
Yeah.
A lot of imaginary situations that didn't need to be all white, you know?
Well, right. But I mean, I even just think like of you talking earlier. I mean, yes, Jackson 5, which is an important story, but like seeing something as simple as Taj Mahari being in Full House.
Right.
Where it's like not history. It's not like actual people. It's like just normal people.
Yeah.
Like you being in this, Beauty and the Beast is fantasy, but you being in that story, like that was so simple.
Sure.
And yet it meant so much.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Of that representation.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of representation, Pose.
Okay.
Talk about it. Like,
Pose.
Important stories being told.
I mean,
on a mainstream platform.
Yes.
Did you watch the show before you had booked your role?
Let me tell you, I couldn't.
Really?
I was, because I didn't get seen season one. Like, for whatever reason, I was not in the room where it happened season one. And I was in my feelings about it. I was like, finally, a show about Black queer people. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't even in the room for season one. Like, I was... like, I could not. And so I feel like it was like a goal. Like, I was like, I got to get in this room.
Yeah.
I got to get seen. And it happened. It happened season two. And once I started to actually get the auditions is when I was like, okay, I can start watching now. Because, like, you know, like, I understand that. Ballroom culture. And I understand, you know, the what was surrounding it. So I wasn't, like, worried that, like, I would go in the room and, like, you know, not understand, like, you know,
the circumstances,
the world in which the show takes place. But no, I was not able to watch it until I think I got my first audition, and I think we had just started season two hadn't even started airing. And I think I got my first audition, and I think around that time it had just hit Netflix.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, the timing is like, you know, like I can sit with it and not feel awful about myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said you knew a lot about ballroom culture.
Uh-huh.
How like, what was your, not educational process on it, but like, how were you immersed in the world to begin with? Because I mean, this is my perspective. I didn't know that much about it. I've seen Paris is Burning. Mm-hmm. But like, I think it is so... it's so just like, I think it's great that people are learning about this period of New York City.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And this culture. So,
I was introduced to ballroom culture in high school back in Baltimore.
Oh.
Like I said, there was a lot of trans girls that went to school with me. So, like, you know, kids were voguing down the hallways. Like, it was a it was a part of gay culture at my high school.
Gotcha.
Kids were in houses. My best friend was in the House of Prodigy. So, like, I was always kind of, like, on the periphery.
Gotcha.
Seeing the kids vogue.
Gotcha.
You know, like, learning the vernacular. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a death drop, it's a dip. Or
see, yes, all the subtle things.
All the things. And obviously, I'd seen Paris is Burning.
Mm-hmm.
Iconic.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was never in a house. I never walked the balls.
Gotcha.
But I've been to balls. I've watched the balls on on YouTube. Yeah, yeah.
So then what was it like finally being on the set?
I mean, I was beside myself. Actually, you know, it's funny. I filmed it during rehearsals for Beauty and the Beast. So, like, I was, like, walking home after a rehearsal one night, and my agent called me, and he was like, okay, they want you to propose in 2 days.
What?
I was like, oh, okay, well, wait a minute.
Wow.
And, like, Paper Mill let me out for the day.
Wow.
And, yeah, I just went up to Silver Cup in the Bronx and literally was out by, like, 2:30 and was back at New 42 rehearsing Beauty and the Beast.
Shout out to New 42, yep.
Shout out to New 42.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah, it was great. Like, I showed up, like, you know, like, somebody ushered me up to a suite with a shower and a living room and took my breakfast order. I was like,
oh, okay.
Okay.
Right.
And also, like, this was my, wait, was that, so this, like, I hadn't done much TV before, like, I'd done one TV job younger a few weeks prior.
That was just a few weeks prior?
That was just a few weeks prior. You know what's funny? Pose and Younger aired within a week of each other.
So my
TV debut was two shows in the same
back to back.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of nuts. So, like, you know, I really wasn't used to this treatment. So
right.
I, you know, I'm like my own dressing room, like
right.
I got like
the
three
theater.
Lines in
yeah.
like, my own dressing room.
And the breakfast orders were
in the breakfast
like,
order.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's just super fancy, like, up there at Silver Cup. And, you know, they have built for the second season or did build, like, the entire set.
Mm.
You walk into the bar, which I guess they used to shoot down at the box.
Okay.
But then they just created it up in the Bronx.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could not tell a difference.
You really
between
can't.
Seasons, yeah.
No, like, I felt like I was in the box, like, when I was in that, in their shooting. Yeah, it's just super fancy. Like, and I remember just being like, okay, just do what you do, do what you do, do what you do. Just because there's just so much going on, the cameras,
yeah.
the lights, the this and the that. But yeah, it was wild. It was wild. So much fun.
And like, I mean, I know this is a question that gets asked a lot of theater and TV actors, but I just feel like it must be crazy going from doing one, not one take, but like one through line of a story on stage. Like you just go, go, go. It's live, live, live. You live that entire experience. And then for TV, it's like, okay, we're going to do it from this angle and you're going to do your lines. And then you relive it. And I'm like, how does that, like, talk to me about that experience.
It's almost like I can't even think about that.
Yeah.
It almost like, and until like somebody, like I, just because I haven't done much on camera work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm going to do what I do until somebody is like, make sure you're aware of this, you know? And if
yeah.
nobody's saying
yeah,
anything,
that's smart.
I'm just going to keep doing what, you know, like make sure like I know where the camera is, but like, I'm just going to stay in it
and be
like,
present, yeah.
yeah. And be present. And hopefully, it like, I'll see what happens when it comes out on,
right.
on camera. But like, yeah, I think just stay in the truth of it, and the camera, if you stay in the truth, the camera will pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mm-hmm. that's one thing that I learned, like if it's not working in your head, it's not working on the camera.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Like in little moments where I was like, oh, I really didn't know what I was doing right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And it looked like I didn't know what I was doing.
You like remember back.
You know, yeah. like, and I remember back and I was like, yeah, I didn't know what that intention was with that line.
Wow.
And it looks like it. Just because the camera's right there and the camera doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. So as long as you know what the truth is, you're sticking to the truth, the camera will pick that up. Now, stand here, don't stand here, don't raise your arm like that because it's in front of the camera. Ooh. Those are things they're going to tell me.
Yeah, but you know, it'd be hard, I feel like. I don't know. Limiting, I should say. Did that feel limiting if they said that to you, those kind of things to you?
I think a little bit. A little bit, but then you have to trust that you're not in control of the storytelling.
Okay.
They are.
Yeah.
You know, so I just can't even worry about that. Like,
right.
You know, like at this point, like I feel, you know, like in 20 years,
hey.
I'll, you know, I have like my little tricks of the trade, but like
right.
At this point, I'm like, okay, what are we doing? I'm right here.
Right.
Where the camera? The camera's right there.
Yeah.
Okay, who's in the scene with me? Okay, A, B, and C. I'm looking at y'all. Okay, let's go.
Wow, and that was your second TV job.
It was my second TV job, yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
I screamed when I saw you. I was like, ah! That's
I was
crazy.
Up there.
And we have to talk about Hillary Duff, too. Younger, I mean.
Hillary.
If there's anything
congratulations, she just got married.
And looks good doing it.
I mean, I'm obsessed with her.
I am too. If Beauty and the Beast is here, Hillary Duff is here.
I mean,
okay, y'all didn't see the hand gestures, but she is higher than Beauty and the Beast.
Higher.
I don't really know what I want to ask you about, except for like, was she perfect?
I mean, she was gorgeous.
Of course,
she was gorgeous. I mean, like, and it was like so, like she wasn't like extra. Like, okay, so, I mean.
I mean, you also have to like spill the tea on Hillary Duff, but I'm just like, ugh.
I mean, we can kind of spill the tea, right?
I mean, like, she's not listening to this.
She's not listening. Yeah. Like, Hillary, if you're listening, you know all this is true. You know, like, I was in that one scene, and like, it's like, you know, she's a regular. She probably had like 17 different other scenes to shoot that day.
Yeah.
So she showed up into the location, and it was like, okay, what are we doing? What are we, like, you know, there's tons of people, like, handing her things, and I'm there with my
first job, yeah,
and it's with Hillary Duff. And, like, let me tell you, when I was in middle school, like, me and my best gay friend, Landon, would sit and watch, like, we were on the phone, talking to each other on the phone, watching Lizzie McGuire as if we're Oprah and Gail watching Barbara Walters, you know, from across the country with each other, just, like, dissecting and saying what they needed. They needed to have us up in there because we would have told them A, B, and C, and Lizzie and Miranda and Gordo would have co-signed with us, and you know, like, it was all that. So to be like up in the gigs with her,
right?
Like, I was beside myself.
Yeah.
So she, you know, she shows up.
How?
Being all Hillary Duff and all amazing, and she's actually like really chill. But like it was very like. Real world actress at work, like, okay, what is it? What are we doing? Okay, I stand here.
I see.
You know, she was going through the gigs. I was having a whole experience. So we're going through, you know, the lines, and you know, like maybe she hasn't taken the time to like, it's a very short scene. So like we weren't like, we were kind of rehearsing the scene and we weren't like really getting it because like the lines kind of weren't there.
I see.
And like, I got kind of blamed for like messing up the line.
It was not your fault.
It might not have been my fault, but I took it. I was like, yeah, I messed that up. Like, that was me. That was me. But like, so it was kind of like rocky. And you know, we went through the first couple takes. It was kind of rocky. We weren't connecting. And then I was like, they had to like, we did a break to, shift camera around, and you know, she grabbed her pages and was kind of like, you know, looking at her pages, and I was like, can I tell you something? And she was like, what? And I was like, this is my first TV job. And she was like, oh my God. And you're probably like, what is this? And like, after that, like, she wanted to be the person that like ushered me into this like new experience.
Right.
Like, she turned into Mama Hillary, and then the scene was amazing and we had like amazing chemistry, and like she wanted to show up fully for me.
Yes.
And it just made me feel so good that like she cared.
I'm tearing up right now.
I was just trying to like break the ice and figure out a way to like kind of get into kiki mode with her, because like the scene was like, you know, we were being cute and fun with each other.
Yeah.
So I was like, how can we, you know, break this up. She's going through the gigs. Like, you know, she's been working all week. She's a working mom. Like, she's busy. Like, this is a big experience for me. I just got here. Like, how can we break this ice? And I was just honest with her. I was like, look, this is my first TV gig, girl. And she was like, oh, man. Okay, let's get this together for you. Like, boom, 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 boom.
Wow.
Let's do it. Let's get in the gigs. And it was, it ended up being so amazing. And she was like, let's get a picture. We got a picture after. Like, she was so sweet.
It
could not have been more, like, it was the best first TV experience. Like, I could not have imagined.
Of course.
That was the first way I was going to be ushered into the TV world.
And, like, did you call Landon after?
I mean, no, I did not call
Landon.
Left
hanging.
I haven't spoken to Landon in a while. Uh-oh, Landon, uh-oh. If you're watching, I got to call you. Next time I'm in Baltimore, we got to hang out.
Yes. I mean,
we got to debrief about Hillary.
Right.
And to see how I'm going to get up on this reboot.
For real. Okay. Well, now that they, like, the showrunner's gone, like, we can take over.
I mean, I'm like, what is the tea?
I don't know. We got to figure that out.
I'm going to message Hillary and be like, girl.
You better. Use your connects.
Girl, what's up? Remember me?
So now your current gig, like, you have been booked and blessed in
2019.
And it's coming into 2020 with us.
Look, I can't. 2019 was so crazy, so wild crazy for me. I feel like I've been asked to do these amazing, like, you know, LeFou happened, and I played Jacob in La Cage aux Folles at Jiva Theater. And I had a great experience doing that, playing these comedy roles. The TV thing happened earlier this year. And then randomly, I got asked to do a movie in LA where I was the star.
Yes.
Like, and then Mulan, like 2019, like, if you told me that that's how I was going to make my TV debut, my starring in a film debut,
right,
and then Broadway debut in the same year, like, I would have, like, I don't know, slapped you in the face and, like, told you to stop playing with me. Like, it's just wild crazy to me. Like, I'm so thankful to be getting these opportunities now, and I'm so grateful that I didn't get them earlier in my career.
Are you?
I am, because now I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. All timing is perfect.
I'm ready for these opportunities, and I'm not going to screw it up. Like, I would have, like, if I was 23 getting my first Broadway show, I would have screwed it up. I would have. Like, I remember, like, that kid wasn't the kid that you give a Broadway show to.
Well, okay, wait, how do you think you would have screwed it up, though? I'm curious.
I just wasn't. Okay, so. I don't know. Like, I was always naturally talented. I necessarily didn't work hard or take things like, I wasn't about the work in the way that I am now.
Yeah.
I did good work and I showed up to work. But, like, you know, I was probably partying the night before or doing this. So that, like, I was living life earlier in my 20s, which I love that. Like, I experienced some things. To be an actor, you need to have experience with life.
Yeah.
And I totally have life experience now that I can draw from to be an actor. You know, so I'm glad that I, like, you know, didn't get those opportunities didn't go my way.
Right.
Early in my career. 'Cause I can fully show up for them now. Like, I got all that. Not all the partying. I still, like, you know.
Just have fun.
Now, yeah, I have fun. But now, like, I know how to go home. I know how to not, like, yeah, I know how to go home at night. Like, in your early 20s, you don't know how to go home. You want to keep the party going. Guys, where are we going next? Guys.
We can hit one more spot, please.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not like that now.
So. Like, I know it's time to go.
Wait a minute. It's 1:30. Wait, it's 1:30? Uh-uh. I need to get on the train.
Right.
Because the train's be acting wild. Nope. I'm going home.
So what do you think the biggest thing you learned during 2019 from all of these bookings and gigs?
That I belong here.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I feel like I've been, I don't know, all throughout my career, I've learned to do what was expected of me. and that that didn't always fall in line with what I knew that I could do and what I was capable of.
Okay.
But I feel like I spent a lot of time being like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. I can do that. That's not what I do. And I feel like 2019 was the year where they were like, okay, so what do you do?
Uh-huh.
And I was able to do all those things.
Got you.
And yeah. I did them well. Or well enough. You know, well enough for me to be like, okay, yeah, this is where I belong. This hasn't been, because I think when I got into this, I was just like, this is what I want to do. I jumped into it without really knowing that I could make money doing it in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that this was the only thing that I was passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was like, don't do that.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I belong here. And I think that that is, you know, there, like I said earlier, there's always that person that kind of wants to remind you that you don't belong.
Right.
And I feel like I've been up against that person a lot throughout my career. And it's like I've finally been able to like prove that person wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that person's not a factor in the way that like a couple years ago I was still kind of like, you know, up against that person,
right?
Literally and figuratively, you know.
And like letting them take your energy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Your attention. Yeah.
But yeah, it's proven that I belong here.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just the beginning. In a way, you know.
Yeah, totally.
But even with that in mind, what do you think? What do you think your grandma would say right now?
I mean, she would be like, "I told you." She would say something like that.
Yeah,
I told you to figure it out. You figured it out. Yeah, I feel like she would say something cute. Yeah, she would be very, very proud of me. And the thing is, like, I was always shy, too.
What?
I know.
A plot twist.
Plot twist. Yeah, like, I was a very shy kid.
Hmm.
So I think it was like, so when she says figure it out, it was almost like she was, like, challenging me to get out of my shell.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to, like, shy kids aren't on TV.
Right.
You know, because I was always up under her. You know, like, I was a little gay kid. Like, I wanted to be protected by my grandmother. I hung out with, like, adults. I didn't even, like, really, like fuck with kids like that.
Right.
I was like, y'all wild. Y'all crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to be in here gossiping about Oprah with the ladies.
The grown-ups.
The grown-ups. Yes. Yeah. I don't want to go in there with them. But, yeah, I think it was almost like, you know, she was kind of putting that in my ear as like a, you know, you're going to have to come out of your shell if you want to do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And like she did things like she made me join the choir at church. And I remember like that was so, I went to an apostolic church in Baltimore. And I guess if you are not familiar, it's a more conservative black church environment. And being a little gay kid in that environment, it's tough.
Yeah.
And I remember her being like, you better get up there and sing. You sing Aladdin.
Ooh.
You sing Beauty and the Beast. You sing Little Mermaid. Go up there and sing for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like being in that situation and having to like, you know, navigate being a little gay kid with a high soprano voice,
right,
sitting in the soprano section,
right,
with like, you know, with the opinions that like went along with that, like, you know, those were like very formative, character building experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the moment, like, I was very young, and I think, you know, being in Baltimore City and being realistic, I don't know that my grandmother was like, go be a professional actor.
Right.
But I think in those moments, she wanted me to build my character. And she was like, yeah, you go ahead and audition for that school play, or you go ahead and go be up, go sing in the chorus. You say you want to do that. go do that. Because I know that's going to be a little difficult for you. But
pushing you to do it.
But push me through it. Yeah. So I think it would be like I told you so.
Right.
Moment.
Like a, okay.
Yeah.
So I could talk to you forever.
I mean, we're not done. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I got the final two questions for you. I know. But for today, the final two questions to wrap up the podcast.
Yeah.
If you could recommend a piece of black art, whether that's a movie, a book, musical album, what would it be?
Okay. Okay. So I read the Broken Earth series last year.
Yeah.
N.K. Jemisin is the author.
Okay.
She is a woman of color, black woman, writing in the fantasy sci-fi genre.
Okay.
And I loved reading this. It's like three books. They're like mad long, mad thick. But I loved reading these books because like, You don't see blackness in this genre
right
a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I think TBS is turning it into a series. So I was also like, wait, can I be anybody
right,
up
right.
in this? What characters can I play?
Yes.
But the Broken Earth series, I think the first book is called The Fifth Season. I've already cast it. Like I think Patina Miller should be in it. Viola Davis. I've casted three women. Who's the baby? Diane from Blackish.
Yes. I can't think of her name,
but Miss Thing from Blackish. Like I've already cast the three women in K, for the TBS series. I don't even know. I might be lying, but they're turning it into a TV series. N.K. Jemisin, the Broken Earth book series. So if you like sci-fi, if you like fantasy, pick it up because, and especially if you're black and like, you know, if you're black in that genre, you are used to not reading about yourself
right
in that
totally.
Genre. So yeah, I would say that the Broken Earth series.
That's
pick
a good
it up.
Recommendation. Mm-hmm.
N.K.
like
Jemisin, shout out to you. Shout out to you, girl.
And so the second question being, if you give a shout out to a fellow black artist, who would it be?
That would be Billy Porter.
Hey, Billy the Porter
is out here taking the world by storm.
Yes, he is.
And it is so inspiring to watch because I just feel like he is carving out a path that is that's just for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like I've looked at him like we've actually worked together. Like I he directed me in a show once.
Oh, really? What show?
Twilight Manchego at Nymph.
Okay. Yes.
This was back in, what was it, 2009, I think? Long. Rest in peace, Nymph.
I know.
Yeah,
I
goodbye,
know.
Nymph. End of an era. But yeah, he directed me in a Nymph show. And also, like, in college, like, I remember discovering I was assigned Beauty School Dropout.
Yep.
In the style of Billy Porter.
Right.
And I didn't know who he was back then. And like these were the early days of YouTube. So like you could barely find anything. So and I think I found a recording of him on The Rosie Show and I was beside myself. And I was like, if there was like that was kind of a moment where I was like, oh, there's people in this business doing that.
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute.
Right.
Okay. Right. Good. Okay, great. We got him. I'm here to stay.
Wow.
And to see him now trailblazing on camera this way, being up in TV and in movies and, you know, I just like this is my path.
Yeah.
So thank you for like making it even easier for me. Like he's doing the hard work, you know, and I'm just so lucky to follow. So, yeah, Billy, like he's always had a place in my heart, and I feel like he keeps showing up throughout my career to kind of guide me a little bit.
Right.
Even like when I shot on Pose, like we had a great conversation. He was like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "I'm working here today."
Wow.
Yeah, and how like special. We sat, like he was, you know, he sat and talked to me for a good like 5 minutes, and he was like, "All right, I gotta learn my lines. Get out of my face." but like he gave me that time,
absolutely.
You know. So yeah, so Billy, you're doing it. Keep doing what you do. You don't need me to tell you that, but like, shout out to you.
Yes, shout out to Billy Porter.
Oh my
always.
Goodness,
I support that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
So if folks want to follow your journey on social media, where can
on
they follow
the social,
you?
I am Kevin T. Curtis on Instagram and Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin, don't forget the T.
Don't forget the T. You can go see Hillary Duff on his Instagram feed.
I mean, like, there's a couple pictures of me planning her hair.
Yay. Yes. But thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my goodness. I just had the time of my life.
It was the best.
Like,
I'm obsessed with you.
I never want to leave.
Yeah. We will be here until y'all need us the next time. We'll be right here in the studio.
Yes.
Until next time, y'all.